Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in with Walker Weilman and Steve Jordahl. Steve, good morning to
you. Good morning, everybody.
By the way, I just wanted to cheer you guys up.
Yes.
I'm just reading here, glanced at a story online. Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg's personal wealth rose by $27.3 billion in 2019.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to cheer you guys up. Yeah. That is more than twice what my personal wealth.
Yeah, he's a little bit wealthier than us.
Yeah.
But not by much.
$27.3 billion with a B.
It's one of those where year, what do you do with all the money?
You couldn't spend that in two lifetimes.
Yeah.
I'd like to give it a shot.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Wouldn't we all?
Be willing. All right, Steve, what do you got?
Well, let's start here with the campaign trial. I like to bring you guys every so often what Democrat candidates are saying on the campaign trail so you know what you're voting for, you know what you get. We're going to start with Joe Biden, who this is going to be cut seven, Brent, who was on the campaign trail recently. And he was asked, you'll hear the question, it's about the economy and how far he would go to put a green economy in place. This is cut seven.
Lately, Vice President Biden, I'd like to ask you, three consecutive American presidents have enjoyed stints of explosive economic growth due to a boom in oil and natural gas production. As president, would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
There you go.
Wow. The answer didn't even seem to hesitate.
Nope.
Waited for the question to finish. He would be well. Listen, President Obama said he was going to end the coal industry, and he didn't do it.
So
but
Hillary Clinton.
But a lot of individuals were out of work because of it.
You know, our economy is it's sensitive, but yet it's not. I mean, it's strong in that one or two things. It takes a lot to mess up our economy or to bring it down, if you will. It's a very diverse, strong economy. But at the same time, there are some policies that can hurt our economy. And going after the coal industry is one of those that would severely hurt our economy. So, you know, President Trump has our economy moving very well, thanks to Obama getting it ready for him. No, I'm kidding. But if someone like Joe Biden comes in, or really any of the other Democrats, because they pretty much all hold the same, relatively the same positions on doing away with coal and other forms of what they call pollutants in the environment. If they come in and get these policies in place and you have the executive branch, which has arguably too much authority to implement all kind of rules and basically laws, then we could see our economy take a hit from these policies, and we saw it a little bit under Obama.
You know, there's something I don't understand about what Joe Biden, former vice president, said and what they believe in terms of making the transition and moving away from fossil fuels, so coal and oil and natural gas, those kind of things. What are they going to replace it with? I mean, we don't have renewable energy technology available for large-scale production and provision for our energy needs. They're so flippant in saying, well, of course I did. Yeah, we, you know, get rid of coal.
Easy.
Get rid of, what do you replace it with?
Right.
You can't run, you know, AOC, famously, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, saying, yeah, let's get rid of cars, you know, and whatever she said, 10, 12 years, you know, we'll get rid of automobiles and because they need gas, you know, oil-based, you know, industries. But they don't have a way to replace these technologies. What would they go to? Have you guys ever heard any of their suggestions? Now, I understand that we do have solar power and those kind of things. You know,
you're talking
turbines.
About in mass scale.
Yes,
scalability. But like, and even the one thing that they have talked about is the rail system. Remember they talked about building the high speed rail?
Yeah,
yeah.
From all over the country, I know California tried it. And we sent $8 billion in federal tax dollars over there, and it just failed. But even that, how many trees are you going to have to bulldoze to get the railway from New York to Mississippi? or yeah. New York to Memphis.
Yeah.
And what kind of fuel is that train going to run?
Go ahead, Steve.
The only plausible energy source that is not being used rampantly now that would cover is nuclear power.
Right.
But they oppose nuclear power. Now, it is clean to the environment except for the nuclear waste, which you can find places to put or shoot into space or do something with. That's the only thing that looks like it's even remotely possible.
Yeah, and in order to go nuclear, the environmentalists would have to stop filing lawsuits, which is how they stop new plants. Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point. We can move on. But they're just so flippant in saying, oh, yeah, let's transition. Well, transition to what? There's nothing out there, unless you want to go to nuclear.
Right.
But even in terms of nuclear power, it can replace electricity that comes through other forms. I'm not sure you can't power vehicles, you know, with it. I just don't know what they've got in mind. The technology isn't there.
You haven't seen Back to the Future yet with the Fusomatic?
Put the banana peel in there. So why can't they just say, well, you know what? Eventually we would need to, and I support that, but we don't have anything yet.
Yeah.
We're investing in, you know, in trying to drum up these technologies, but we don't have it yet, so let's stop talking about it. Let's continue the research and development and see what we come up with. But no, I'm not willing to end the coal industry because we've got nothing to replace it with.
There you go.
All right.
Well,
my rant is
one more
done.
Thing is they've ramped up the base. The left-wing base has ramped up the rhetoric so much that candidates can't say things that make sense like that.
Right.
Because they say the world's going to end in 11 years.
Right.
If the world's going to end in 11 years, then we don't really have time for research and to make logical decisions. We just got to do something, no matter what it means.
Well, that's true. That was AOC's famous statement. We've got like 12 years.
Right.
And she said that when she was elected. So 2018. Yeah. So we're close to being 10 years away from the end of the world.
Yep.
She said this is our World War II. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I it's too easy for me to get on a soapbox, Steve. Let's go to something a little less tension.
Well, the senators and congressmen and women are in their districts now for their Christmas break, but they will be heading back to Washington. They should be back, I think, this week. They should be back to fill a couple of days in this interim before New Year's. One of the things that we don't know and probably won't get done in that time frame, though, is this impeachment trial in the Senate. Now, the Republicans in the Senate say that they have settled on a quick, no-witness exoneration process because so many of them say it's a joke. We don't want to, you know, I'm ready to vote now. I think the articles are a joke, says Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. So it looks like they're going to just kind of dismiss this thing and move on. But they haven't yet got the articles of impeachment from Nancy Pelosi. She's hanging on to them. How long do you think she can do that?
Well, this is turning into bizarro world. I don't know whether she had planned this all along, but what she is supposedly doing is she's demanding of the Senate, we want to make sure this is an unbiased process. We can get a fair trial in the Senate after the House of Representatives, under the control of the Democrats, conducted the most partisan, the most biased process. Now she says we're not sending the articles of impeachment over to the Senate for deliberation until you can guarantee us a nonpartisan, unbiased process.
You're not going to get a nonpartisan anything in Washington D.C.
Right.
I don't care who's in charge, but the Democrats want it both ways. They want to do things that are out of the ordinary and that don't follow our traditional the way the judicial system works. When it comes to due process and both sides having a fair hearing, remember they said all along during the Russia hoax, well, we're not the court of law,
right?
We're Congress and we set the rules and the parameters. But now, when things get over to the Senate, well, we want to treat it like a courtroom. We want it to be unbiased, which is as if you're picking a jury. But a few months ago, they were saying we're not a courtroom. we don't have to follow the courtroom procedures. So this idea that you're going to get Democrat, if you say we want no bias, well, then everybody has to recuse themselves. All Republican senators and all Democrat senators have to recuse themselves because everybody's got a little bias in Washington, D.C., depending on which side of the aisle.
Well, and the Democrats have set the stage for that.
Boy, have they.
With that process that we've just endured. So I don't know whether she – I don't think Mitch McConnell is going to play this game with Nancy Pelosi. Now, maybe Nancy Pelosi is okay with never sending these articles of impeachment over to the Senate, and then forever and ever Trump is impeached, but they don't have to endure the indignity of having – these ridiculous charges swept out of the way by the Senate. I don't know what she's got in that mind of hers, but we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, she can't hold on to it forever.
I think
the political pressure would build too much.
Well, but like once again, they've hyped up the rhetoric so much that President Trump, to them, is a clear and present danger, has to be removed effective immediately.
Right.
Well, we're going to wait a little while.
Yeah.
You can't have him either. He's a really bad threat, and he's got to go, or this is all politics, and we can wait on it as long as we need.
Right. Well, listen, I'm going to wait with bated breath for Nancy Pelosi to send those charges over to the Senate. I am. I'm going to start.
It's going to be the least.
Right after the show gets over, I'm going to hold my breath.
How do you bait your breath?
I think it's the same thing as holding your breath.
Is it?
Yeah. My wife, depending on what I've eaten, my wife sometimes tells me my breath smells
like
bait.
This is a phrase that I have never looked into.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Folks, please don't write me. I know the difference between that bait and the other bait. It was just a joke. All right, Steve, come on, help me out.
Just some news from Washington. Longtime Georgia Representative John Lewis, Democrat and former civil rights pioneer, has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And he is pledging to fight this, but he's got a long uphill battle.
That's a very, very, very lethal form of cancer.
It is.
And all cancer is dangerous, but some are, you know, types are more deadly, and the survival rate is far lower in pancreatic cancer. If he's stage 4, I don't wish this kind of thing on anybody.
No.
So we ask our listeners to pray for Congressman Lewis and pray for him and his family. There is a small percentage of people who do survive it.
Yeah.
And maybe he can be one of those. So
yeah, that's tough news.
Yeah. That's tough for him and his family, especially during this time of year. Mm. But anyway, so we ask people to pray, and Christians should be praying for everyone and anyone who's suffering and battling.
All of our leaders.
That's right. All of our leaders.
Him.
That's what the Bible says to do. So, all right, Steve.
In the Middle East, let's talk some goings on in Iran and Iraq. 15 fighters, U.S. fighters, including commanders, I'm sorry, 15 fighters, including commanders, have been killed in U.S. strikes against a pro-Iranian armed group in western Iraq. This is according to a Tehran-backed paramilitary group. The official said 7 fighters were also wounded in the Sunday night strike, which the Pentagon said targeted the Iraqi Kitab Hezbollah in response to a barrage of 30 or more rockets that were fired by them on Friday. So some hot fire stuff going on in Iraq, and Iran is behind it. Iran has retaliated. Sunday, they launched rocket strikes at the U.S. military bases north of Baghdad, and they evacuated. No damage done there.
We spoke this morning in the story meeting about a U.S. service member dying from Iranian attacks last week.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that? I missed that.
In
this story.
I don't know if it's the same attack.
Okay, I thought this all started with the Iranian backed forces killing a U.S. service member.
Well, this was in retaliation for I'll read it here. carried out strikes against in two neighboring, I don't know, it doesn't say here why.
You know, the
it
interesting
might have,
thing
might
about
that.
This is you just wonder, the one thing people aren't asking is, what are we doing over there? You know, that's just one thing that, it's just, people act like you can't talk about that, because then you're unpatriotic, or you don't know what you're talking about, you're not a military expert, but one thing that I will say the U.S. has done a poor job doing is articulating what on earth we're doing over there. You know, but they'll say, well, we got to back the Kurds. We got to protect. One thing you don't hear is we got to protect Israel, which should be a top priority. But, you know, that's just, we got the Mexican, I'm on a rabbit trail, but I'll take it anyway. We got the Mexican cartels on our southern border wreaking havoc, killing Americans, you know, shipping billions of dollars of drugs into the U.S., which are also killing Americans by the thousands each year. And we're in the Middle East firing rockets, sending troops in, spending billions. To what ends, you know? Do we need a stronghold there for what? So that's one thing that every time I come across these stories, that just strikes me that there's not real a real deep conversation about what we're doing over there, why we're so vested over there.
You're not alone.
Protecting Israel.
You're not alone. President Trump is bucking much of his Republican colleagues by wanting to withdraw from Afghanistan, for example, and reduce our footprint over there and bring troops home. Rand Paul is a big fan of his for that.
Yeah, and there was this story, it was a couple weeks ago, but it was a bombshell that really didn't make much of a wake, if you will, and it was that our own military was covering up how well or not well the Afghan war was going.
Yes.
That for a decade, they were basically fabricating all of the statistics to make it look like the war on terror in Afghanistan was going well, when in reality it wasn't going that well at all.
They tried that in the Pentagon Papers for Vietnam. You remember
That's right.
Well, I don't remember, but similar situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and that didn't get as much play as it should, and I don't know if there's investigations going on to hold people accountable.
Yeah.
The press is kind of largely distracted by President Trump going after President Trump, so you don't have a whole lot of...
The temptation for the military, and I'm not throwing them under the bus, I hope investigations will reveal how and why and how much, but the temptation is for the military, because this, our republic, requires public approval via Congress to fund these efforts, or if in the unlikely event that we actually declare war on somebody through Congress, through the constitutional means for which that's supposed to happen. But because public support has to be behind military efforts, you don't, sometimes you don't want to tell the public how badly it's going.
Yeah.
Because then people will ask the same question you're asking. What are we doing over there?
Yeah.
Still in Afghanistan? Are you kidding? Since 2001?
Yeah.
We're going to be over there for, you know, that's coming up on 19 years.
Right.
And people want to know. So you kind of don't, the temptation is you don't want to let them know how badly things are going.
Yeah.
Those questions
can
end your opportunity to turn the war around.
Yeah, but I don't think falsifying data is the answer.
No.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying
not.
Temptation to sin, so to speak, is the metaphor I'm using, is you sit there and you go, well, we got to do something. We can't let them know what's happening. And if that's what has happened with Afghanistan, you don't want trust in the military to go down, because next time we really may need them to be somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got?
Speaking of the press, which is not holding.
Speaking of depressed?
The press.
The press.
Which is not holding accountable the whole downplaying of the war. The Washington Post took a big stab at Virginia Governor Ralph Northam about last year sometime, when it was discovered that he had been in law school. He had dressed up in blackface, either that or was under a Klan hood in a picture in the yearbook. Back then, they wrote, Governor Ralph Northam can no longer effectively serve the people of Virginia who elected him. His shifting and credibility-shredding explanations for the racist photograph on his medical school yearbook page, his medical school, and the silence into which he then succumbed for days are simply too much. He's got to go. Well, this weekend, they kind of reverse course. Now, I don't know if it's because he's a Democrat. I never heard of them doing this with a Republican. I'm just saying. They wrote this weekend, the history of U.S. politics is full of second chances, of scandal-scarred, disgraced, and irredeemable public figures staging improbable comebacks, but few back-from-the-dead narratives have been as swift and sure-footed as the one Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has managed this year. And then they go on to talk about how well he's done with racial reconciliation things, and Yeah, he's all back in good graces. So the outrage is only so long, I think.
Only lasts so long. And, you know, I did. We talked about this in our story meeting. I did go back and look it up. And the governor never did say which one he was in this picture. Again, right. There's someone in blackface and then standing next to somebody in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, complete with the hood. So he never did say which one was him. He did say it's racist, clearly racist and offensive.
And he admitted to dressing as Michael Jackson for a some event. So he
some
did
event. So
the black Michael Jackson.
So listen, I will say, first of all, obviously, in my opinion, blackface is offensive. Obviously, the KKK outfit is offensive. I'm not sure someone who did this back in college in the 1984 medical school yearbook. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure someone should have to step down, Republican or Democrat, from their, you know, from the governorship because of that. Because first of all, high school and college kids do all kinds of stupid things.
Yep.
I think it was appropriate for the governor to apologize. And if he has to make amends with the black community, he certainly do that. So I wasn't one that called for him to step down. But this has been the leftist playbook.
It has.
If you've done one thing wrong in your past, you should step down, quit.
Yep.
You know, you're canceled.
It was the left that created this standard, the cancel culture, if you will, or the resign culture. If you dig up something from 40 years ago, they created this. That the narrative, they did it to Roy Moore over in Alabama. But when it comes to them, the Washington Post decided they would rescind that. It's kind of bizarre, though. We're talking almost a year. We're talking 11 months after that happened.
Yeah.
And the Washington Post randomly runs a story that they rescind.
Yeah.
Where does that come from, you know?
Well, I don't know if he's running for governor again. But
yeah, I wish they would do that with President Trump. Rescind all of their negative articles.
Maybe that's why they did it. If he's still got a political future, they want because the Washington Post, if they're sitting around, they're going, well, we sure can't throw a race to a Republican.
Yeah.
So you know, clearly the governor didn't step down.
So we need to pull back a little.
So we need to pull back so that if in the eventuality that Northam runs for something else, then we can endorse him. Yeah. We can't endorse somebody that we are calling on to resign.
That's true.
All right. What else?
All right. Let's finish up.
Gotta be something good here.
Well, no.
No. All right. Well,
There's a movie theater chain called the Alamo Draft House, and they're kind of a boutique theater with these big lounge chairs and tables. They serve food. They have live pre-movie shows with a comedian or something, and they make an evening out of it. And so parents who lined up and brought their kids to the new Star Wars movie, which I have seen, which is pretty good, actually.
Really?
I thought so. They went to see, and you know who was up on stage for the pre-show? Two drag queens that the Alamo Draft House brought in to do their preview. This one man said he had his 7 and 8 year old sons asking why the boys look like girls in crazy clothes.
That's a very good question, son. That's what I was. Very good question, son. I'm proud of you for asking that.
What little clothes they wore.
What is the fascination with drag queens nowadays?
Everywhere.
This seems to be the issue du jour.
Yeah.
For the left.
I think they picked up on the trans rights movement.
Yeah.
And they've kind of leveraged that a little bit.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Well, first of all, I don't want to get in a big recliner and eat a big meal before I watch a movie if I've paid for it, because I'm likely to fall asleep in the middle of it. But drag queens, that would keep me awake.
That would, wouldn't it?
All right, folks, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening.